Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We got DG9 in the house for the first time in the calendar year of 2016. We got catching up to do, man.
We do, buddy.
We've missed out on a lot of Jaguar game conversations, how the season wrapped up. New defensive coordinator will be found at some point. Bob Babich, by the way, congrats to him for getting a job as quickly as he did. Now the linebackers coach with the San Diego Chargers, or maybe the L.A. Chargers. We don't know yet on the Chargers. We know the Rams are headed to Los Angeles, despite Stan Kroenke saying it was a bittersweet day. First time he said anything like that in this whole process about how it's going to bother him to leave. I'm a native Missourian, and I'm named after two St. Louis sports legends. I don't know what his middle name is. I'm guessing Musial was the first name, and I don't know what his middle name is. But, I mean, if you're Mr. St. Louis, man, why are you leaving?
I mean, was he really? Or is that just, like, on his way out the door?
He made that up,
like,
right?
Stan Musial, right? Stan, that was Stan?
Stan Musial,
his first name was Stan, right? So my name is Stan. Let me use that line going out the door after telling this city that you can't support the NFL, St. Louis. You suck. I got to get out of here, basically, last week.
You're in a two-sport town, and one of them ain't the NFL.
Right. I mean, just crazy what he said last week, and then for it to be bittersweet yesterday. Come on, man.
I mean, that was seriously all business right there.
Totally business. Hey, I don't know if I really blame him,
I don't blame
frankly.
Him.
I mean, you know, look, you can get into this whole thing. Should you leave? Should you not leave? Just don't pretend that it's bittersweet. It's a business decision that you're making, and you probably don't get to be a multi-billionaire by not making hard decisions from time to time. He doesn't come across as the most likable guy, but probably a lot of guys that climb to that level of success, Dave, that have a lot of traits that you say, wow, I really wouldn't like to be around
him.
It's
hard to be
much
real likable when you're, you know, climbing to the top
when you're
over everybody.
You know what, Buster, every minute of the day. Here's good news for you, though. Your owner, Jaguar fans, Mr. Shad Khan, the embodiment of the American dream, as I like to think of him. Shad Khan was asked, because those filthy poachers in St. Louis think that they're taking somebody else's.
I heard
squad
about that too.
Oh, don't take our team. Don't take our. You took our team. Can we have your team? Can we have your team? I mean, the hypocrisy of the St. Louis sports fans, supposedly these great sports fans, salt of the earth, middle America. Jim Thomas of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch went, I can only imagine, pleadingly to Shad Khan. Actually, Jim's a good guy. I'm sure he was just doing his job. But it has been a topic of conversation. Well, if we lose the Rams, maybe we can take the Jags, because Shad Khan wanted to buy the Rams when they were in St. Louis. So that must mean he wants a team in St. Louis. No, he wanted an NFL team. Shad Khan quickly shot down any notion that he's going to St. Louis, told Jim Thomas he has no interest in it. And then, and I'm paraphrasing here, went on to say he's a big believer in fate, and he ultimately, now the way it's worked out, believe it was fate for him to own the Jacksonville Jaguars. Loves the fact that he is making it a multi-continent appealing franchise to the folks in the UK as well as right here on the First Coast.
Duval.
There you go. And honestly, I mean, just go read. There's a story up on NFL.com about it, and they're going to write these kind of stories. But these are great stories to hear, Dave. You'll love your owner coming up right away. No hemming and hawing. Smack down that notion. Don't even go down that path.
I applaud him for it. You know, go ahead and cancel and just knock down anything from anybody that's saying we should move anywhere. Because, you know, like you just heard, Duval, baby, that's where we belong.
Duval. All right, Dave, you have a Merry Christmas? Everything good with the holidays?
We had a great time. We were in North Carolina visiting family the whole time, which would make it hard to get into the studio here.
Understood. So. I get it. Certain times of year, I know last week you were visiting friends on the golf course.
Yeah, hey. And I didn't because it was a nasty day.
No, that's right, it was. But hey, look, brother, I'm taking full advantage. I was out on the golf course yesterday.
I heard you were.
I will play as much between now and August as I
absolutely
possibly can. But so we'll talk about the way the season ended, your thoughts on that, what they need to do, the decision to retain Gus Bradley, and, you know, the structure of the you know, decision making mm-hmm. here in Jacksonville and where they need to go this offseason. We'll get into a
maybe
bunch
talk
of
about
stuff.
Blake a little bit. And
maybe talk about Blake Bortles.
Awesome numbers he put up this year.
He did. He may have surpassed some of your single season marks that
just
were,
a, just
that
a couple.
Were out there.
Just a couple.
He may have surpassed all of Mark Brunell's as well. Yes. He surpassed pretty much. He rewrote the Jaguar record book this season, so we'll get into that. And your favorite movie, apparently, of Oscar season is The Revenant. Man, you
right
came
now,
in
strong,
raving,
baby.
Raving
it is
about
strong.
It. Have you seen a lot of movies lately?
I haven't seen a lot. I still haven't seen Star Wars, which I've been. We got back, and
really?
My son, I want to go see with him. But since we're in school, it's like it's tough. I don't like to go at night because there's too many people there. And
now is he into it? I mean, the Star
he
Wars
is.
Thing?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, he hasn't really seen many of them, but he has all the lightsabers and all the little costumes. We've been. He's been. You know, a figure every year. Like, he's always got to be somebody from Star Wars, even though he's never really seen them. He just likes the thought of Star Wars.
I'm
so.
Telling you, man, kids today are more into Star Wars than kids
oh, yeah.
ever
well,
were
and
when
he
Star
has the
Wars
video
first
games,
came out.
Too, so he knows about it. He just hasn't seen the
right,
movies.
Right, you, the video games, you play all the different levels, like you play the movies
yeah.
Is,
yeah, exactly.
is what it is. So they know the story inside and out. My kid studies the games on YouTube videos, so you know he yeah. knows how to beat them before he ever gets them.
Yeah, my son's on there, too.
They love that kind of stuff. All right, David Garrard is in the house. 641-1010 is the phone number, as always. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Today, we're asking you about the NFL's return to Los Angeles. Will it be a successful one? Will the NFL thrive in L.A. this time around where it has failed in the past? You can share your thoughts with us on Twitter. At MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. The Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. We'll step aside, come back, and begin the conversation looking back on the way the season ended for the Jacksonville Jaguars with David Garrard. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today here on this Wednesday, brought to you by our friends at Metro Rooter. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. If you'd like to be a part of the program, 641-1010, both the call-in number and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll check in on that a little bit later on. Dave, let's talk a little Jaguar football. It's been a while since we've had that opportunity to do that with you, and I'm sure you watched it all down the stretch. When is the last game you were in here for? Were you? Did you come in after the Indianapolis game? After they put 51 on Indy?
I don't think I was.
I think you missed about the last four games of the season, right?
Yeah.
So from that point on, that was obviously the high point of the season. You know, franchise regular season record for points. It, you know, exploding against your division rival. All those great things, and with three games to go, you felt. Okay, now we've seen what they're capable of, right? We don't expect 51 every week, but we know when they put it together, look at what they can do. Particularly, they had a slow start offensively in that game.
They did.
And they still did all those things. Special teams, defensive scores, Andre Branch, you know, got the game turned around. From that point on, Atlanta, New Orleans, Houston, and, you know, not competitive with Houston at all. And we understand Houston went to the postseason, but these other teams were middling. Atlanta was 1-7 in their last eight when they came in. What was your overall feeling?
Well,
I mean, last month,
I listen to the show all the time, so I've heard your conversation. You know about how looking into the season, you would have been very happy at the beginning with the record, and even if they had one more win, I think that was kind of what you predicted. But the way things unfolded this year with a lot of teams not having their quarterbacks, the way the division played out where nobody was any good, that you would have expected even more. Especially the way, I mean, when you look at Blake's numbers, they're great. You know, 35 touchdowns, 18 interceptions. You want to be 2-1 in that category, over 4,000 yards passing. So he did a lot of things. But they are a little misleading because so many times he had turnovers at the worst possible times. There were so many times where the offense started off super slow, super sluggish, and the other team is putting up points. And so now they're having to come back, so he's having to throw the ball all over the park. And you could see that when he has the opportunity, he can. But then also the other team is just trying to hold on to their win. by, you know, not doing a whole lot to
don't
them.
Don't necessarily care if they're giving up yardage.
Yeah, yeah, we'll give up yards. We'll give up some
as
points.
As long as that clock's rolling.
But, you know, we've got 28. You guys got 3. And, you know, you've closed the gap to 17 now. And, you know, maybe now you have 21 points. So you're adding points. But, you know, we've already had such a big lead because of those two turnovers in the first half that, you know, it is misleading. And but the fact that he was able to do those things in his second season, to be able to, you know, grow that fast and be able to put numbers up like that. Like, he went into the offseason knowing that he has things he has to work on, but he also went into it knowing that, hey, I can do some big things in this league. I have a lot of confidence now that I can, you know, grow with. But what has to come with that is he has to get the run game. They have to get the run game going because he needs that. He needs to be able to hand the ball off a bunch and let the run game win some games for him, you know, because he's having to do a lot on his young shoulders right now that he doesn't have things to fall back on to keep him out of trouble, to keep him from having those costly turnovers at the wrong times. Because you can have 17 interceptions when you throw 35 touchdowns. It's just those 17 interceptions can't be at the worst possible time. It can't be the game-winning drive.
It can't be pick sixes.
It can't be pick sixes. I mean, as long as, you know, I played in the league, I can only remember maybe one, maybe two times where I actually had a pick six. Is because when you throw pick sixes, that means it was a bad throw out wide and the guy just caught it and just kept going. Most of the time, that's how it is. When you throw into the middle of the field, you have to have somebody pretty special to bob and weave through everybody to return it. But it just – a lot of his were to that one guy that picked it and just ran it back. There weren't a ton of times where you felt like, oh, you know, that was a good throw. The defense just fooled him, or the defense tipped it, you know, and somebody picked it. It was usually to the guy. It was usually something where you're like, nah, how did you do that, you know, because – Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, they all throw those interceptions, but they don't have them twice every game. You know, they've gone 3 or 4 games without an interception, and then they have one. So he has to work on his decision-making ability. That's the area where I feel like he has to be better at. The intermediate throws a little bit as well, but really just decision-making. Knowing when to just chuck the ball out of bounds. Knowing when to use your legs. Like, he has great mobility. And a lot of times I think he wants to get that ball thrown so much, which is great. I mean, you want to be a quarterback that will sling the ball down the field, but you actually have the ability to change the possession where it's 3rd and 8, and they've got everybody covered, you know. It's great to have, you know, a guy like Allen Robinson and Hearns where you can throw the ball up to him. But you don't understand how much defenses hate when a quarterback will get the first down.
Because they feel like they got everything
covered. We got everybody locked down. I can tell you so many times where I would run for the first down and I'd be walking back to the huddle and the defensive lineman would be just yelling at me like, dude, stop running. Let, you know, just throw the ball away or something. And it frustrates them so much. I'd see coaches in the offseason and they would say, man, you are one tough guy to get down. You are one tough guy to defend against because we can have all your receivers. We're not scared of any of your receivers. But then you go run for the first down, and we're like, you know, they get defeated a little bit, and that's what you have to do as a quarterback, where I think sometimes he wants to throw the ball so much, which is good. That's a good thing. But you also have to learn those decision-making times where you need to take off and use those legs. And you could see when he would do it, it'd be great. You know, there weren't too many times where he'd run and you'd be like, why are you doing this? Most of the time you'd be like, hey, take off right there. There's right. Nobody in front of you. But then he would make a big throw sometimes. You'd be like, oh, okay, good job. You
right. Know? And that's it's a delicate balance, I'm it sure, is. To walk. I'm sure there's some young quarterbacks coming in the league that are overly reliant
exactly.
on escaping. You know, one read, let me get out of there. So you appreciate the fact that he's trying to go through his progressions. But at the end of the day, David, 58.6 completion percentage, 58.6%, 58.9 is rookie year. So statistically, not much of a significant difference there. How does a quarterback go about significantly improving that stat and moving towards, if not making the leap immediately, to the mid-60s in completion percentage.
Well, that's where you want to be, is 65 or better. That's where everybody kind of strives for. But it honestly is.
How did that come about? Is it just?
I think they just look back at the numbers.
Here's what the great quarterbacks did, and that's kind of where they're landing.
Exactly.
Right?
Who had productive years, and where were their percentage completions at? I mean, that's just. They figured it out over the years where the goal should be. And usually if you're playing really well, you're up there around 70, which it's really hard to be up there at that level. But he just has to continue on looking and breaking down the film on good plays and bad plays and figuring out where to get these throws off. Because he's, I'm sure, just watching the film, he can see where there were guys open as soon as his back foot hit the hit back there, and he could just throw it and make the throw. But sometimes he's looking bigger. He wants the bigger throws, bigger shots. He doesn't anticipate it sometimes like he should.
And that isn't that part of it, though? This is a team that took more shots downfield than just about any team in the National Football League in terms of completions over 20 yards and things like that. So that's going to bring your completion percentage down a little bit too.
It is. And but that's why I said he has to continue to work on his mid-range throws, you know, because that's where the money is. I mean, it's great to throw the ball deep, but that's a very low percentage throw. But when you can hit anything 15 and under to down to five, that's where a lot of your money is, because, you know, think about your tight ends, your backs out of the backfield, even your receivers are big guys. So throwing those slants, throwing those end cuts, the outbreaking routes, those are where you can really make hay. I mean, just think of Tom Brady. He doesn't always chuck the ball super deep down the field.
No.
He's hitting, you know, Julian Edelman when he's healthy.
Deion Lewis, whoever.
Yeah, he's hitting all these guys because linebackers are and safeties are the worst cover guys on the defense. So your interceptions go down. Even if they get their hands on the ball, they still usually don't catch the ball. Your DBs are the guys that are becoming your premium, you know, ball making, skill playing guys out there. And they're so far away from you when you're throwing the ball out there on the sideline that, you know, their speed, they can cover and pick the ball off so fast. But your linebackers against a guy like Julius Thomas, it's tough for him. Even a safety, it's tough for those guys. So you can get a lot of easy completions with those guys. And it just seemed, if you just think back early when Julius Thomas came back, how many times did they miss on just little five-yard outcuts, little sit-down routes where they weren't on the same page? So that's why I say he has to work on those mid-range throws where he can you should be up like 80% completion when you're throwing the ball 10 yards and under in the middle of the field, because those guys are usually open in there against those linebackers and safeties. So that will help your completion percentage. But, yeah, I mean, if you can take those chunk plays and throw it down the field and, you know, get up a couple scores, hey, I'm all for it, you know.
Do you, as you watched Blake Bortles, did you notice how his mechanics held up this year? Because last offseason, you know, he admitted he was working, you know, a little bit with a tired arm during his rookie year. I think some of that is the fact you're playing more football, throwing it more than you ever did in college. But also, I think the mechanical issues probably played into that. He worked very hard on that last offseason and said he came through no arm issues whatsoever this year. What did you think about his mechanics and the way he threw the ball compared to his rookie season?
Hey, well, yeah, you can just see by just the numbers that he continued to throw touchdowns, still had a few interceptions, but he didn't drop off. Like, he didn't just start nosediving as he got into the last, you know, four or five games of the season. So that right there can tell you that along with just having the understanding and the reps in games helps you. When you have those reps in the games, that allows you to have a better focus coming into the last half of the season, the last few games of the season, because you've already been there, done it all year long and last year. And so now you're out throwing so much more comfortable now. Your confidence level is so high that you're just making plays now. Now it's just, you know, almost backyard football where you're just out here having a good time with your guys making plays. And you can rely on your fundamentals to just keep things going. But he's great at, you know, making these, you know, tough throws and running around and awkward throws. He's really good at that kind of stuff. But when the time to just drop back, make the throw to a seam route, an out route, whatever it is, he's on point with it now, and you should see that grow even more next year. I would think his numbers may not be as high as they are this year. Like, I still would expect him to throw 4,000 yards. Maybe his touchdowns might not be as high just because he's got a better run game now. That's what he needs. He needs his run game to come along so that everything's not on his shoulders.
A better defense would lead to more leads in the fourth quarter when you're trying to burn clock.
And not feel like you have to, not feel like you have to throw the ball all over the place to make this huge comeback every game. And not that most games you're going to have to make a game-winning drive. But not where you got to start your game win drive 12 minutes to go in the fourth quarter because you're down two or three scores. That's not what you want. You want to be battling, you know, back and forth. Okay, we had a turnover, but defense stopped them after this turnover. Not we had a turnover, it was a pick six turnover, you know, or they got the ball at the 50-yard line and through one play, you know, went down and scored. That deflates your team. That deflates your offense. But when your defense can go out there and make a stop after a turnover, well, now your offense is like, hey, guys, we messed up on this last drive. Let's go out here and redeem ourselves. Let's go down here and get some points. That's totally different when, you know, the turnover turns the game and they go score. And now you're down, you know, another touchdown or whatever it is. So it goes hand in hand. With the defense not being able to live up to their billing, live up to their side of the ball, that does put a lot of stress on the offense and him. So he feels like he has to go out and do even more every time he goes out there.
We'll talk about that defense coming up and how much improvement you think they can show from one season to the next. We certainly saw the offense take big jumps with a lot, though, of the same personnel already in place, just taking big growth steps in the case of Blake Bortles and his young receivers. Not the same story and scenario on the defensive side of the football. So we'll talk about that coming up as well. John Osier will pop his head in as well from Jaguars.com in just a little bit. Greek Comedy Night coming up this Saturday, January 16th, featuring the world-famous Basile the Comedian. He's been seen on HBO, Showtime, and Comedy Central. It's all happening at the Ramallah Club on Parental Home Road, and the proceeds will benefit our friends at St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church and their Centennial Fund. $50 tickets for adults ahead of time, $35 for 18 and under, $65 at the door, so it pays to get in early. Cash bar, heavy hors d'oeuvres, of course, dancing, and the show as well happening. It's Greek Comedy Night this Saturday, benefiting the St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church Centennial Fund at the Ramallah Club on Parental Home Road. You can contact Jem at 563-1789, 563-1789 for more information on that. Coming back with more with David Garrard, Fat Tony, John Osier, and I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Oh, he does know. John Osher in the house from Jaguars.com, a senior writer. Garrard's back sporting that full playoff beard over here, huh? Do we got Johnny O up, Tony? What's going on with Johnny O and his microphone? Speak up, John Osher, we can't hear you over here. He watched The Revenant, and he wants to be Leo DiCaprio now.
He's over here wearing his resume. I like it.
He is. he's got a
good look.
I want to, you know, just be like for 2 weeks, maybe a month, like, you know, hunting and trapping and all that kind of stuff. But I'm able to drive back to the resort, and
you don't want to sleep inside a horse.
Maybe the mink that's at the end of the bed, you know,
something like that. That's already been kind of cleaned and dried out a little bit for you. Or maybe he just wants
roughing it within reason.
Right. Exactly. He wants to be an East Carolina pirate. That's what it is. You ever wear a bandana and an eye patch just for fun?
No.
Maybe the next time you come in, we can do that.
Maybe for Halloween.
That'll be good for social media, I think. Johnny O, what's going on, man? The NFL's back to L.A.
Yes, it is.
And we know
the Jaguars are not.
Those filthy poachers in St. Louis have designs on luring another team. It's funny, on one hand, how dare you steal our team? Can we have yours? You know? I mean, that's it. Jim Thomas of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he's doing his job. I know it's been a topic of conversation because Shad Khan tried to buy the Rams.
Sure.
And so they think, well, maybe he'd like another team in St. Louis. And so he asked Shad Khan. He quickly flat out said absolutely not, very happy, and in fact, as he's mentioned in the past, said he believes when it's all said and done, it was his destiny to be the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, you know, sometimes a statement like that that he made about it being his destiny can get lost or brushed past. But everything you hear from people that you talk to around Shad say that's exactly the case. That's not just something he says publicly, but it's something he feels. And the connection that he feels for this town and what he's doing is almost, you know, it's almost illogical in a way, because there's no real reason that he would think, I'm going to be connected to Jacksonville. But the connection that he feels is real. And I guess anybody who sort of doesn't believe that that's the case, I don't know how many more things he can do or how true to his word he can remain when everything since he bought the team has been a steady stream of actions speaking louder than words.
Yeah.
I guess is the best way to put
probably
it.
Probably can't do anything
right.
Different. There are always going to be some people that are going to be.
And if you're around here, Mike, and you're around here more than you were before you were doing this show. So you're in the building and you know, the staff that they've added, the commitment to game day experience, the taking city leaders to London and having them become part of the international community. I'm not enunciating that very well, but you know what I'm getting at. All of the things are all things that in no way had to be done. It's not like these are not things you would do if you were sitting back with a cigar going, yeah, in a couple of years, I'm out of here.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense that you would put all of this energy, commitment, vision, planning into this if you weren't committed to it. There's no reason to. No other owner would do that. I don't think Kroenke was doing that in St. Louis.
Right.
He was trying to get out. So it's just a different thing. People say, what makes you think that it's different than St. Louis? Well, the difference is, and Lindsey Jones from USA Today had the best tweet of the night. Well, the difference is you have one owner who's trying to leave and the other one who's clearly trying to stay.
Right. He's trying to build roots. And
I don't know how much more
and
you
infrastructure
can.
And
what more do you want other than those actions?
And for that.
But I get that it has to be a story in St. Louis. If I'm Jim Thomas.
Oh, he's doing his job. I don't mind
what you
got to
do.
That.
And it's a logical thing. There's a lot of things that add up on the surface, but once you dig deep, you clearly see, okay, well, that's
right. Yeah. In terms of the on-field product, I can totally understand any Jaguar fan that is like, really, you know, we've won 12 games.
Two separate issues. We've won 4 at this point,
I understand right. that. But my point being that no matter how bummed you may be about that and the fact that how can Shad Khan keep Gus Bradley? You may be in that camp, right? Or whatever. And this is this is insane. Think where you were 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and had this L.A. thing been a half decade sooner, this real push, you would have been right in the middle of this and might have been at the top of the list. And that has
certainly would have been mentioned every day.
Correct. Whether or not you were going or not, you would have been in the.
I mean, David lived through that as a player.
You would have been beat up daily in kind of those kind of stories about how they don't support the franchise, da 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 da. And in less than 5 years, and there may still be people out there who think, you know, there's a great conspiracy to go to London, and that's fine. Think what you want. I'm not going to waste my breath trying to convince you otherwise. But for most Jaguar fans that got a pair of eyes, in a half decade, less than a half decade, it's completely flipped around, and it's no longer, to me, anything worth really discussing seriously.
You hear fans who look back on Wayne Weaver's ownership and sometimes criticize the way it ended. He did two things for the city of Jacksonville that should never be forgotten. He got the team here and he got Shad Khan here. And that's a very simplistic way, but he had other options besides Shad Khan before that worked out. And he wanted it meant enough to him to keep it here. And he held out, found whatever it was, a man who clearly has a bigger vision for what he wants to do with Jacksonville than some people even understand.
And would at least make every effort,
yeah.
right?
You know,
because look, if you're not met, if If attendance was 20,000, right, it'd be a different story. It's not 20,000. We understand that. Right. So, yeah. Look, Wayne Weaver.
And that's not to give Wayne all the credit. Shad Khan, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that Shad Khan, I mean, yeah, that Wayne Weaver's responsible for what Shad Khan has done.
Wayne's responsible for the franchise, though, period.
Right. And then Shad Khan, amazingly enough, I mean, I got here in 2011, and Shad bought the team officially that January. The difference in the step, in the foundation, and by step I mean just the daily walk of the franchise, how it's perceived locally, what it's doing, the daily energy is so much different and was so needed. It's a completely different organization than what I came back to in 2011.
All right, let's talk about on-the-field stuff with the Jags. David was just saying, you know, assessing Blake Bortles' second year, he thinks – that mid-level accuracy, that intermediate throw accuracy is where he can really start to boost his numbers, his completion percentage, and if he can hone
moving
in on
forward.
That. Moving forward.
Yeah.
Right. Something to work on.
Short would be good, too.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's short to intermediate. Anything 10 yards and less, 15 yards and less. What do you see Blake Bortles focusing on improving this offseason?
Well, I'm curious to ask Dave if I can, because I've been saying that for the last 6 weeks of the season, that the offense – as good as it was with big chunk plays, the one thing that it didn't do, A, was run the ball and the short intermediate stuff. And I thought that's why it felt herky-jerky sometimes, where you'd have some huge plays, but then the efficiency didn't allow you to get going. In terms of being more efficient with short stuff, is that easier for a quarterback to do?
It is much easier because you're not throwing the ball that far down the field, you know. So I think it's just him working with his receivers, his tight ends, his running backs on being more efficient. And he has to let the defense take him to the more open guy, where sometimes he throws the ball out there wide because he believes in Hearns and he believes in Allen. So he's believing in those guys, but he has other guys that are open.
Is there any part of that – I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah.
But is there any part of that – not yet quite trusting the offensive line?
It shouldn't be, because shorter throws mean the ball's not really in your hands that long, so it should help you with the offensive line, and that's what his coaches should be working on with him. Usually when you have a shaky offensive line, it's three-step, it's five, your back foot hits the ground, get the ball out. I just think he's probably always been a big play guy. Like, he likes those big plays. He got the strong arm.
And that's what you can't teach, right?
I mean, you really can't teach it. And so that's a good thing, to be able to work on the short game. Like, that's – most quarterbacks are not working on – they are working on the short game just to keep it accurate, like it probably has been. But for him, it's – he wants it to be a bigger and better part of his arsenal, which is a good thing. I think another thing is the screen game didn't always seem like it was a big part of the offense, and those are a lot of things that can help you as well. It didn't seem like they threw very many of those bubble screen type plays to the receivers, which
why it didn't seem that?
Yeah.
Because they didn't.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So those are easy completions for your receivers, for your quarterback, to get him in the rhythm and in the flow of the game, because a quarterback just wants to get a completion to start the game. Usually when you get that completion, you're like, okay, here we go. Let's roll now. A lot of games, they started off so slow, so sluggish, because he was having a hard time getting the ball completed to start the game, and so he was trying to do too much at times to get the game going, where once you can get those few completions, get the first down, then you get into the flow of the game, and it was too many times where he wasn't able to do it. Like I was saying earlier, if you remember when Julius Thomas came back, how they were just off so many times on so many short throws. I remember one in particular where it was in the end zone, and it was Mercedes. He ran just a 5-yard quick out, but he threw the ball on like a little seam, I think, to one of the receivers, I think Hearns, in the back of the end zone, when Mercedes, as soon as he turned around, he was wide open. And I know that's the first read because I know the play he ran. So, but in his mind, I have more confidence throwing the ball to those guys up the field instead of this real simple, easy,
and
quick
that's young
throw.
Guy stuff, right?
It is not trusting what you're seeing. It's, you know what, I'm gonna make a play here, that kind of thing. So usually coaches say, if you're gonna do that, you better be right. You better be right, and you better make the completion, because this guy is wide open. You don't go broke putting money in the bank. You
no,
know?
No, so, no, good play.
No. Exactly. So that's the thing that he has. He has to be more in trusting what he sees and trusting the film study that he had.
The big thing in the off season, David, was he went and worked on his mechanics. And I'd always heard that when you do that sort of thing, it's sometimes tough for them to hold up the entire season, the next season. It seemed like, I'm not going to say there weren't times where the mechanics dropped, because I'm sure there were, but it seemed like they held up to a pretty remarkable degree. He didn't seem like a different player week 16 than week 1. Did you see?
No, he definitely did, and it continued.
And that's a pretty important
thing.
And
the way that I said, the reason why you can tell that is just by his numbers. He still continued throughout the whole year putting the same kind of numbers up, even right up until the end. The tough thing is it's his decision making, because he gets down in so many games that, okay, now it's kind of backyard football and the defense is kind of just kind of hanging on a little bit. So you're able to get those numbers. That's why his numbers are a little bit inflated. But it's still a good thing, because he still is going to be able to learn from all that stuff, and his decision making next year is probably going to be the one big thing that you're going to see is different.
John, we got a break. How was jury duty?
I got lucky. Well, I shouldn't say I got lucky. I did not become part of the system.
You didn't.
He pleaded the fifth.
You were rejected.
He pleaded the fifth.
I just kind of sat in a room all day. They called, I guess, 12 or 13 juries. I narrowly averted, I guess, being involved with the Lonzi Barton situation, which, you know, obviously awful situation. But that was one of the juries called. And so I guess I could have somehow been involved with that, and I wasn't. So for better or worse, I'm here.
We're glad to have you back. Yeah. All right. See you Friday.
I'll look forward to it.
All right. John Osier, he's a liar, but he's a good reporter, so we keep having him back. At John Osier on Twitter. And, of course, you read him on the digital pages of Jaguars.com. Coming back, this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's take a look at this date in football history. January 13th through the years, 1974, Miami beat Minnesota 24-7 in Super Bowl VIII. That's right, Super Bowl VIII day. The calendar has changed a lot. Larry Zonka had 145 yards rushing. He was the MVP, and Miami won their second consecutive title. That one, the follow-up season to their undefeated year, the 72 season, 73 Super Bowl. 1998, the NFL completed a $9.2 billion deal to keep Monday Night Football on ABC, and the entire Sunday Night cable package stayed on ESPN at the time. Didn't TNT used to have some Sunday Night Football back in the day?
I think they did, yeah.
Were they the first ones who had Sunday Night Football?
Maybe.
If I'm not mistaken, before ESPN even had it. And now Sunday has become the big deal,
yep.
Sunday Night Football on NBC, compared to you're never going to get the same ratings on cable like you do on the broadcast networks. 2005, the NFL fined Randy Moss for what? What do they fine Randy Moss for this time? $10,000 Randy Moss got a fine in 2005. What was that fine for?
Was that the thing with the cop?
No, not the thing with the cop. Any guesses over here?
I don't know. I just know straight cash.
Was it the
straight
mooning?
Cash, it was the fake mooning of the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
fans,
yeah, I remember that.
Right, and Joe Buck. Oh, that's disgusting. I mean, he pretended to pull that. He didn't actually pull down his pants on national television. A bunch of famous birthdays for this date from the National Football League. 1957. You guys remember Russ Erksleben? Russell Erksleben.
Why is
he famous?
No, I don't
you
know.
Don't. All right. He was born in 1957. He's 59 years old. He was a punter out of the University of Texas, and he went 11th overall in the NFL
draft. Wow.
11th.
Wow.
11th. Wow. And you think Brian Anger was a holy cow. He played about 6 inconsequential years in the NFL, by the way. Another wasted draft pick. Bam Morris, the former Steeler running back, born in this date in 1972. Micah Ross, local
Micah.
Kid. JU, your Jacksonville Jaguars. A fun guy on Twitter and just an all-around good First Coast citizen. Micah Ross, happy birthday to you, the big 4-0. Nick Mangold of the Jets turns 32 years old today. Josh Freeman, the longtime Indianapolis Colts great, or at least for a week, he turns Only 28 years old for Josh Freeman. Wow. Does he have a future in the league, Dave?
I mean, he's got to get somewhere and stay there. And just
didn't look like it when he played for Minnesota a couple years ago.
Not at all.
Right?
I think it's more of his attitude right now, and if he wants to be around. I mean, because he just showed you with the Indy that he can go out and still make plays.
Still,
there's
right.
no way some of these other quarterbacks have jobs and he doesn't. You know,
I mean, he's
not even starting. I'm just saying. On a team as a good backup.
You look at his numbers in his second year, they were phenomenal with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And to go from that to where he is now, hard to believe. And two birthdays in 1989, Morgan Burnett, one of the best safeties in the league, plays for the Green Bay Packers. And don't call me muscle hamster, Doug Martin. I guess Duggernaut is now what he
That's pretty good.
Duggernaut.
It's better than muscle hamster.
Yeah, but muscle hamster is so memorable, though.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Duggernaut's pretty memorable.
Think of all the action figures you could have.
Right.
Muscle hamster.
The muscle, I don't know what they would look like, and I'd hate to think. But, all right, that is.
That's why he doesn't want it.
This date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The NFL has left the city of St. Louis again. For the second time, the National Football League is leaving St. Louis, Missouri. The NFL and the owners announced yesterday that the St. Louis Rams would be moving back to Los Angeles, starting with the upcoming 2016 season, with the plan being to build a new stadium in Inglewood, ready to be played in 2019. San Diego has a year to work out a deal with the Rams to share the new Inglewood Stadium, and if they can't or don't want to, then the Raiders would get the opportunity to pursue a deal with the Rams. There is a $550 million moving fee that Stan Kroenke, the owner of the now-again Los Angeles Rams, has said that he is planning on paying an all-one lump sum. The Rams were in Los Angeles previously from 1946 through 1994. Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger went on with 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, told them that he does indeed have a sprained AC joint in his throwing shoulder, and added that he also has torn ligaments in that same right shoulder. He said he is considered day-to-day, hoping to at least practice handoffs, that kind of thing, today. Adam Pac-Man Jones just won't let go of the idea that Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown was faking at the end of the game on Saturday night after he was laid out by teammate Vontaze Burfict. In an interview with Brandon Marshall for Inside the NFL, Pac-Man said that if Brown misses this weekend's game, that he will apologize, but followed that with this, quote, "When Saturday gets here, whatever time they play, he's going to be cleared Friday, I promise you, 24 hours before the game." The Steelers play on Sunday, so he had the day wrong, but Adam Pac-Man Jones still making that point. And a quick pop culture note as well, Johnny Cash performed at Folsom Prison, which became one of the most iconic live albums of all time. 48 years ago today, he actually performed that concert. Rolling Stone has it ranked as the number 3 live album of all time.
Folsom Prison Blues, baby. All right, there you go. Dave, big Johnny Cash fan, are you?
I am not.
How about that? All right. He's a big fan of The Revenant. That's all we've learned far today. Let's go to the phones for the first time today. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on, talk a little ball with David Garrard. Tom is in St. Augustine, and he wants to do just that. Tom, welcome to Jaguars today. What can we do for you?
Good morning. First, thank you, Stan Kroenke, for rebuffing the offer that Shaq Khan had years ago.
Amen, brother.
You know, I'm glad that that guy looks out for the dollar. Look who he married. You know, he is married to a Walton of Walmart fame. But
really,
John,
I guess I didn't care enough about his personal life to know that.
Yeah, he's married to Ann Walton of the Walmart fame. So a lot of that money, when you go to support Walmart, there you go. But anyway, what I was going to say about Sean, when Sean came here, everything he's done has had a long-term vision for the football team. You look at the improvements he made as soon as he got here to the interior of the stadium. We look at our new video boards, our swimming pools. We're going to have an amphitheater. The plans are shipyards. So everything's a long-term vision, and we all applaud that. Yet when he takes a long-term vision of how he's going to build the team from the ground up, we're going to tear it all down. We're not going to bring in a lot of high-priced, older free agents, or even cheaper older free agents that we would have been, like we'd have signed an Andre Johnson, and I know he wasn't available until this year, but the year before, if we'd have signed an Andre Johnson, everybody would have been like, wow, man, that's great. Well, then maybe you don't take Allen Robinson in the second round as a second wide receiver. So everything he's doing, he's looking at where are we going to be 4 years down the road, 5 years down the road? How do we build this and sustain it? Chuck Noll won the exact same number of games in his first 3 years as we did under Bradley. 12 games. I think Tom Landry was pretty much in the same situation after like 4 or 5 years. He had not won many games. But yet then they went to the playoffs 20 straight years. So we applaud him on one hand for having the patience and the vision to build our city. But yet when he comes over to the football side, so many of us want to be, let's win tomorrow. We'll worry about next year. Let's win today. And I don't think that's the way this man acts or handles himself. So,
all right, Tom, I think you made your point. You're a true believer in the long-term vision of Shad Khan, and you made a lot of good points. And I will just say to that I don't have – just because the guy has a long-term vision and has been successful in some areas doesn't mean he's going to be successful with his long-term vision to build this Jacksonville Jaguar team. Any fan who says, I'm not satisfied with the progress that they've made, that's their prerogative. That's what it's about being a fan. You know, you can feel however you like. It's a passionate thing. It's not always a logical thing. But even if you apply logic to it, you could say, as we mentioned, Dave, they won 5 games against a ridiculously bad schedule this year. And you can say, great, it's great to have a long-term plan. You're falling behind the pace of where we think you should be on that long-term path. So, Tom, you make a lot of good points. I'm not trying to knock you. I looked it up. Chuck Noll did. But he won 1, he won 5, he won 6. So he was going up, up, up. And they were only playing 14 games back then, not 16. Different time. And, you know, certainly a different era as well. The Pittsburgh Steelers have only had a handful of coaches in their entirety of the franchise. That the typical franchise, Chuck Noll wins 12 games in 3 years, wouldn't have stuck around. And so maybe you could say, hey, that's great. But for everybody that started slow, there are only a handful of Chuck Nolls and Tom Landrys. And there are a lot more guys whose names you don't remember at all because they never got a second shot, Dave, or they never built, you know, never took a slow start and turned it into something better.
You know what? I wanted to talk about this. I'm happy with the decision that was made, because as a former player, when you're going through a different head coach, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. And then now as a fan, you know there's going to be things shaking up again. Do you want to go through that again, or do you want to see this guy's vision all the way through so that at least there's a chance that they do add maybe 5 more games to the win total next year? And we're happy that he gave them that last year. He's able to keep the continuity together on offense. And if he just changes things up some on defense, adds some pieces to the defense, which they can do. They have the money. They have the draft. They have some guys that you're going to be expecting a lot more out of them going into next year. You're going to get Fowler back. You're going to have some Derek Marks back. And hopefully both of these guys will be healthy. And hopefully they'll be able to give that pressure along with somebody else that they're going to add, hopefully. I think it's great. But I think also going into it, you're going to be halfway through the season next year, and you're going to know whether or not it's working and whether or not it's not. But I think if you go ahead and bring in a new head coach, now you pretty much can just cancel next year, as it's probably not going to be all that great because they're going to change things up. Now, maybe if they change things up and they start adding a whole bunch of new pieces and you're like, okay, we have a great chance here, but usually it doesn't work like that. They usually want to get their own guys through the draft. They'll, you know, slowly work in some new free agents, but they don't usually get gung-ho and just start bringing a whole bunch of guys in. But at least with this coaching staff now, they just need to add some pieces on defense to make our defense at least average. I just think if we were average this year, we would probably have 4 more wins. If defense was average this year, we would have at least 8 or 9 wins.
Average. Be an 8-win team, 8-9 wins.
Yeah,
team. I agree with you, and that's what they. I think even with the defense not being average, so many missed opportunities within games.
Absolutely.
This year. That all right. Well, Tom, thank you for the call. It's a good call. Let's go to Nick on the north side before we break. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, I wanted to get your opinion about sort of the cultural dynamic going on between Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson. And with David Garrard there in the studio, this might be appropriate for him to comment on as well. You know, on one hand, you've got Marshawn Lynch, the kid out of Oakland. A lot of people consider him a malcontent, even though I think that's a misread of his personality. He wouldn't talk to the media last year, famously. And on the other hand, you have the golden boy you know, African-American quarterback who is sort of everybody's All-American. And I think this played into the decision last year at the goal line in the Super Bowl when Seattle had it first and goal from the one. And Pete Carroll, I think, was thinking about this. I think he thought, I could win with Russell Wilson. Wouldn't that be a big deal? Wouldn't the NFL love me? So I've got this throwaway down. Let me go ahead and throw the ball. Let me see if I can win with my golden boy before I give the ball to the malcontent. And I don't know if you guys noticed at the end of the game, right when they threw the pick, Wilson threw the pick, they showed the sideline. They showed Pete Carroll. And in the background, Marshawn Lynch was standing on the sideline smiling. So anyway, so we fast forward to this year. We've got Marshawn Lynch coming back against Carolina. And, you know, the average fan is sitting there, he's going to be picking up right where he left off last year. Is this Marshawn Lynch's team? Does he get the credit for this semi-dynasty? Is this Russell Wilson's team? Does he get the credit for this semi-dynasty? And, you know, from a reality standpoint, what also makes this interesting is the unprecedented way Wilson finished the season with 24 touchdown passes and one pick, which if you extrapolate to 16 games, is 50 touchdown passes and two picks. And the nearly fantastic finish of the Panthers of their own, almost going 16-0, this game has a lot of stuff in it, but I'm curious to get David Garrard's read on the Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson dynamic. Thanks for taking my call.
We probably beat that to death over the last, a year ago when the Super Bowl occurred, but we got a break. When we come back, you can give it one final treatment if you want to on that day. By the way, Marshawn Lynch that season, 1 out of 5 on scoring from the 1 yard line for the Seattle Seahawks. So 20% success rate, but everyone's convinced they know he was going to score from the 1 yard line. Well, 1 out of 5 in the 2014 season. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll let you weigh in on that day. We will talk about the games coming up this weekend as well. Plus, I found a brand new mock draft hot off the presses from the folks at Pro Football Focus. We'll take a peek at that coming up as well. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, David Garrard has stepped out of the studio for the moment. He's probably going back to watch game film of Super Bowl 49 to refresh his memory of this hot topic, Tony. The decision to throw the football from the 1 yard line. Burning hot topic that needed answering today. We'll get to that. Here's one on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. It says that Shad could do more. How about live here? What is that going to do? I mean, okay, maybe it sends a signal or something. What more do you want this guy to do? I was struck this morning, and I didn't know this because I frankly don't care where owners live. Steve Tisch, whose family co-owns the New York Giants with the Mara family, said, hey, I think this is fantastic. I've lived in Los Angeles for 44 years, and he owns the New York Giants. You know, I'm a Yankee fan. George Steinbrenner always lived in Tampa. You think I care? Why do you care as long as he's doing the right things for your franchise? Where the guy lives.
As I told you, if I was worth $1 billion and owned multiple companies that were making me millions of dollars a year on top of the billion that I'm already worth, I wouldn't live anywhere for more than a week or two. That's the honesty.
He has multiple homes.
Maybe you live on your yacht that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars or something like
that.
Live wherever he wants.
I'm moving.
By the way, if he had bought the Rams, he wasn't moving to St. Louis either.
No.
Right? His headquarters is Champaign, Illinois. That's where he settled. That's where he went to school. And
when you have that kind of money, you have a permanent address somewhere. But then you still have multiple homes, multiple places where you live, and it doesn't matter where your owner lives at.
To some,
as long as he's doing.
To some, I guess it might. He hasn't done enough. He should have put in. Scoreboard should be a 3 feet wider than they are right now. He could have done more. All right, David. Why are we? Even
well, I just want to go back and talk about
yes, Russell Wilson, Dave. were they trying to stick it to Marshawn Lynch? Will this be real?
No, that call was not. Not that it wasn't a good call, but it's just they're not thinking at all that here's the golden boy, here's this rough and tumble kid from Oakland. Let's not give him the ball. Let's put our guy up on a status. They want to win the game.
They have made the whole beast mode thing a ridiculously popular concept ever since he ran for the Beastquake run against the New Orleans Saints back in the playoffs when they went 7-9. They love Marshawn Lynch up in the Pacific Northwest. I talk to their sideline reporter a lot. We have her on my Sirius show quite a bit because Seattle's been in the postseason the last few years. And they absolutely freaking love Marshawn Lynch in Seattle.
Yeah, they don't care if he doesn't talk to anybody. As long as he keeps getting chunk yards out there on the field and runs the ball like he does, they don't care about any of that stuff. And
Russell Wilson didn't need any propping up anyway. No. Russell Wilson's had a phenomenal start to his career. Just look at his numbers.
I can tell you, go back and look at go back to our Pittsburgh game when we were in the playoffs. The play before my 4th-and-2 run, Coach Cutter is saying, hey, Dave, I want to do a little pass out to the side here. And I'm saying, Coach, just let me just do a quarterback draw up the middle. You know I can get 2 yards. He's like, well, we have another down. Let's just try this one here because I think we can get it. So they're trying. They wanted to get that play off. And I'm sure if it didn't work, they were going to do something different on the next play, probably giving the ball to Marshawn. So they're trying to get plays run that they had scripted for if we're down here on the goal line, if we have a chance, this is going to be one of the plays. So they probably had, you know, 5 to maybe 10 plays for that particular situation, and that was one of the plays they called. Maybe they felt good about it. They were probably running just a man defense where they could get that little rub action. The corner just made a good play. He made a good play. There was no – the coaches were not thinking, let's prop up Russell Wilson here. Let's not give the ball. There's no way they're thinking that because they want to get the ball to whoever's going to win the game for them. That's all they're thinking about.
Before we go any deeper, who do you like this weekend? All the road teams won in wild card weekend.
That's so funny that that happened because I think it's going to be the complete opposite this week. I think all the home games are – I think it's a big advantage for the home teams this week.
Who's got the best chance to win on the road this week?
You know, it's hard to go against Green Bay, and I know they don't always look as good, but Aaron Rodgers, if he ever is just Aaron Rodgers, he's going to give them the best chance possible, and their defense isn't bad, too. They have a good front seven.
It's just hard to get away from the image of Arizona smacking them down.
I know.
It's such a week-to-week league, Dave. We see it all the time, right? We see, you know, Houston played well against the Jags, and I understand the different levels of the teams you're playing against, but look completely lost and inept just a single week later. I actually think Kansas City has
I was
going to
say
chance.
That was my next one. Kansas City, the way they've been playing the last, 11 games,
right?
They look really good. I just sometimes have a hesitation with Alex Smith, just his ability to just always – if you want to talk about a game manager, that he is the
no question.
prototypical game
Very
manager.
Very successful at it.
He is, but when you go up against a prolific offense like Tom Brady, and I know they are missing some of their weapons and maybe they're getting some of them back, I'm not sure, but – it's hard to match someone that can score at will when all you do is kind of, you know, you rely on your defense, you rely on gadget plays, you rely on heavily on your tight end, and now Macklin's probably out. It's just I think they have less in their favor than New England, and they're at home. You know, New England, they're a hard beat when they're at home.
Oh, no question. You see a story about Chandler Jones, their defensive end, the Patriots defensive end, went to the hospital on Sunday and then was back at practice on Monday. Well, he went to the hospital. Apparently, it's coming out today that he overdosed on pills of some kind. Nobody knows what kind. I don't know if they were, you know, illegal narcotics or performance enhancing or
sleeping
just
pills,
right, or maybe aspirin. I have no idea.
You don't know.
Right. Do not know, but originally, I think it was WEEI, when they originally tweeted out the news of the story, said it happened at Gronkowski's house. No, I'm not kidding about this. So you start to think, are they having some crazy party at Gronk's house? He's got that reputation of being a party animal. And then they quickly erase that from the tweet. I don't know if that means it's not true or they just don't want to poke the bear. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's not worth going down the road to rile up the franchise that you make your living covering, that's the facts of the matter. You got to pick your battles sometimes. So I don't know if that's the case, but it's just an interesting story that he went to the hospital for some kind of an overdose, and apparently he's fine. So hopefully it was an accidental thing with no you know, further repercussions. I don't know. He's a hell of a pass rusher.
He really
is.
But just all the games, I mean, man, they look so good.
So good.
So good. I mean, just going from last week, just the way there were so many, like, little blowouts here and there.
This, to me, is the best weekend of football, period, that you get every single year, because you get the four best teams and the teams that all won the week before, so they have some momentum. And, I mean, you get doubleheader each day. What more can you ask for?
I mean, the Panthers-Seattle game, I mean, that's going to be just the first one was hard smash mouth.
It was ridiculous, Dave. The Panthers came back in the final minute up against
to Greg
Seattle.
Olsen, I mean.
You know, so, yeah.
I mentioned it yesterday off air, but has any team had a more memorable three-game playoff stretch than the Seattle Seahawks are on right now? That NFC Championship game last year, the way the Super Bowl ended, and then the missed field goal by Blair Walsh. Has anybody in three consecutive games been involved in more drama than that?
That's Matt Blair to you. No, you're probably right, Tony. In three consecutive games, especially since it spans a couple of postseasons, you probably haven't seen that much.
Drama seems to follow
I would
Seahawks
expect
team
it to
around.
Be the same this weekend.
I hope so, man.
I hope so, too.
Let's go out to the phones. Harvey is next up at 641-1010. Good morning, Harvey. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Just quick comment on keeping the GM around. You know, I don't think Shad built his bumper empire by keeping unproductive, nice guys on payroll. And I'm a little surprised. I'll give Gus a little bit of a hall pass, but, you know, Caldwell, he's missed on top picks and he's hit on bottom picks. And I think, you know, both of those are a sign of not really knowing what you're doing.
Well, now how do we know? His last two top picks, first round picks, one of them hasn't played a snap because he got hurt in a kind of a freak accident. Would you say he missed on Blake Bortles?
I'm not there with Bortles. I see some of the things. It's not so much the stuff he does right. It's the stuff he does wrong that I'm really, the book's out on Bortles for me. So,
all right, well, that's fine, but I think you're in the minority on that, and that you're allowed to be, and you may be right, but I think the owner is clearly in the camp of, hey, we found a quarterback, and I'm pretty damn excited that we got a guy who not only broke but shattered the franchise record for touchdown passes. It set a passing yardage mark this year, and he's still doing it while completing less than 60% of his passes, Dave. He seems to be scratching the surface. Remember, a guy they drafted to not even play until this year, this past season.
I think Houston would be very happy to have him instead of Clowney.
Oh, exactly. I mean, just that one move. Had they taken Bortles instead of Clowney, now where would they be? And where would the Jags be? Maybe the Jags would have gone with the Khalil Mack, Derek Carr combination, which would have been pretty good, too. It's looking good for the Raiders. So you don't know how it would have worked out. Maybe the Jags would have taken Clowney, and we'd be sitting here going, why is this franchise perennially snake bit? But look, if that's your opinion on Bortles, that's fine. You can't expect the owner of the team to feel that the GM missed on his quarterback pick when the guy just threw 35 touchdowns in his second year with 4,400 yards. Ain't going to happen. And, oh, by the way, the receiver he took in the next round is headed – one of them, anyway – is headed to the Pro Bowl later this month.
And so. Brandon Linder is considered one of the most unheralded guards in the league.
Right.
Like, that was the first three rounds of that 2014 draft. In 2015, look, it's the year after. You haven't even seen Fowler play, so it's a little hard to make any kind of judgments on them. But Yeldon looks like he can at least be a solid back in this league.
And then you got Cannon, round three, who projects to probably be a starter next year for this football team. So, hey, look, you can feel however you like about it, and that's fine.
And the 2013 draft sucked.
David Caldwell, in my opinion, has much more job security than Gus Bradley does.
Yeah.
Period.
He just needs to do some stuff with the defense.
You know, and it's interesting, though, to hear from a caller who goes the other way. He's giving Gus a pass because he thinks Caldwell hasn't given him the raw material to work with. That's your prerogative, man. That's the beauty of sports.
I would be somewhat down on Gus just because the defense is not playing up to nearly any kind of level that you would want it to when your calling card is a defensive coach. That would be the thing that would bother me to the nth degree.
You know what? And Dave, I can't disagree with you. That and just the fact, as we talked about before, I don't want to beat the dead horse that Leonardo DiCaprio is going to crawl inside of. But, look, they underachieved, man. With about 8 weeks ago, they had the easiest schedule left based on opponents' winning percentages this year, not past years. So you had a pretty good reflection of the competition you had left. You had your you know, fate in the AFC South still in your hands, and you didn't do anything with it. So, anyway, like I said, horse, consider it beaten. We will come back. Pro Football Focus's second mock draft of the silly season is out, so we'll take a peek at that in terms of what they project for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and a surprising drop for one of the top prospects. And again, it's a mock draft. Take it for what it's worth. And today's fan feedback question of the day is this: will the National Football League fare better in Los Angeles this time around? We'll share some of the thoughts that you sent in on the fan feedback spotlight. That's coming up next on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. How did you know what we were drinking down here at Everbank? All right. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony, a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Retro Fitness, Dave. Before we go a step further here, right, we want it to be a healthy step. We want it to be an in-shape step. So tell us what's the latest with your endeavors at Retro Fitness.
Yeah, well, of course, this is the perfect time of the year to kind of get your resolutions and everything going. And your health is one of those. It should be.
Kind of need to do that.
Yeah, me too. Don't worry. Right now, we have zero enrollment. First month free. We also give you free fitness assessment to let you kind of get your goals started and get your goals reached. And give you a good game plan when you come into the gym. We also have some great amenities. We have personal training. We have a place where you can come in with your kids. We have child sitting. We have tanning. We have cardio theater. We have a smoothie bar. We're also putting in some great new group classes. So we're trying to get some more of those insanity type classes where you can come in, good 45 minute, go crazy, turn the music up real loud, sweat, all that kind of stuff. And we're also looking for some good group teachers, too. So if you teach some of those classes, you can come into one of the locations. If you go to retrofitness.com, you can, you know, put your zip in and see which location is closest to you and come in, and then maybe we can work out together sometime, too, as well.
So not just get your body in better shape, maybe get your finances in better shape.
Absolutely.
As well, right?
If you're looking for some employment.
There you go. All right. Retro Fitness, love what you're doing there, man. I noticed all your sponsorship stuff going on with the Jags.
Yeah, we love that. That's so
season.
Cool.
Very cool.
It is.
Very cool.
Still
smiling.
Be a part of the team. We love that.
That is pretty cool. All right, let's take a quick look, Dave, at some guys who may become part of this football team. The latest mock draft is out from Pro Football Focus. Everyone's got their own opinions on who the best players are and so on. But I'll focus here on the top five with the Jags selecting fifth. With the Tennessee Titans, they have them taking Joey Bosa. This is their second mock draft.
I like him.
I like him too. I he's right now top of the board for me for the Jags if he's available. But in this scenario, they had him in their first mock draft going number one. They can keep him in that spot at number two. Cleveland Browns go with Jared Goff, the quarterback out of Cal. We hope Cleveland goes with a quarterback at that spot, whoever it is, because the Jags are not in the market for one. The Chargers then go with DeForest Buckner, defensive end out of Oregon, who they had in their first mock draft going there as well. So, you know, a lot of people are saying, is this a one pass rusher kind of class, at least for the top 10 to 15 picks? Is there only one guy worthy? They feel like there's more than one, but they've got the second one coming off to the Chargers. The Cowboys, as is popular in some mocks, going with Laquon Treadwell, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, which leaves the Jaguars to take Jalen Ramsey in this scenario here. And here's what they wrote about it. They said help is needed in the Jacksonville secondary, and Ramsey is well-equipped to upgrade a number of areas. It's a matter of how they want to use him. He's played free safety and cornerback at Florida State with plenty of experience in the slot. From a production standpoint, he can provide a Tyrann Mathieu-like presence in the secondary, and he'll maximize his potential if that versatility is featured in the defensive scheme. Over the last 2 years, he's graded out very positively in coverage against the run and as a pass rusher, as positive grades in all those. The one name you didn't hear in the top five who's been a staple is Laramie Tunsil, right? You got to scroll down. He didn't go sixth. He didn't go seventh. He didn't go eighth. He didn't go ninth.
That's crazy.
He didn't go 10th, 11th. Chicago Bears select Laramie Tunsil. While most mock drafts, says Pro Football Focus, while most mock drafts have Tunsil as a lock top 10 pick, a limited sample size in our grading, as well as my own personal devaluing of the left tackle position, have him dropping to number 11. The Bears were one of the worst, blah, 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 and tells you why the Bears would want him. Tunsil allowed only 5 pressures on 225 attempts while showing good athleticism in the run game. 5 pressures in 225 pass attempts. That seems like an abnormally low number, right?
Absolutely.
I've watched three of the Ole Miss games that he played this year just in the last week, you know, because you can just go back and watch the replay on YouTube of games. And so I watched three of those games this week, and he is stupid athletic. Like, it's ridiculous the athleticism he has at that left tackle position. And he was shutting down, you know, some of the best pass rushers in the SEC. He completely just demolished Ogba in their bowl game. And that's a guy that people were talking about as maybe a middle first-round pick coming into that game. I don't know where he's going to land when everything is said and done. The evaluation is done on Emmanuel Ogba, but I mean, Tunsil was dominating anyone that they put in front of him. I get that he wasn't playing the first seven games of this year, so his grading is probably limited on that PFF thing. And it's interesting to hear someone else saying that they're devaluing that position.
Right. They are personally. I don't think the league is, man. I don't either. I can understand, Tony, like we've talked about, if you're saying there aren't enough guys worthy because they're not growing them on trees, you know, with the style of offense that they run in college, Dave. But, by the way, Emmanuel Ogba, Pro Football Focus, has him going sixth overall. So the guy who dominated the guy you got going sixth is not good enough.
Well, I heard about the whole left tackle. Is it, you know, the same kind of need? And it absolutely is the same kind of need. Is this, can you find the right guy? But when you do find someone that is even close, you got to get them. You got to snatch them up because, like you said, they're not growing on trees anymore. And it is. The college football program is doing those guys a disservice for the NFL as far as the way they're running their offenses. I mean, most teams are just fast-paced. Look at the sideline. Look at some cue cards. The quarterback might say one or two things, and then the ball is snapped. That's not how it's run at all in the pros. And so everybody is behind when they come in. So that would be my one hesitation with bringing in a left tackle. I think you bring somebody in that has some credibility as a free agent to compete with Jokel. I think he's another one of those, almost just like Gus, where maybe that next year is where he really takes that big leap. Because if you think about Eugene Monroe, we had the same reservations about him. And then he went off and went to Baltimore and started playing pretty decent.
He played decent, but I talked to people in Baltimore who think that Eugene Monroe never should have gotten that contract that they gave him, that they basically didn't have another option to fall back to, and that they gave him to him, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's been okay.
But overall, I know the last game was terrible for Jokel, but overall this year, you would say that he improved.
I agree.
I would say he improved. So I would think going into next year, he would improve just that much more to maybe we're not talking about him anymore. We're not saying he's going to the Ring of Honor, but he is quality. Like, he's gotten to the point where he's quality now and not, you know, his Pro Bowls every year.
Jury's still out on that for me.
Yeah. But you bring in Tunsil. Now you're honestly taking a step back, but to get a step forward, you know, in years to come, because you feel like he's going to be better and he should be a Pro Bowl type guy. But if if Gus is really looking for next year to be his year, he does not want to have a rookie at left tackle protecting his one guy that is keeping him around, you know. So that would be my thought. I think they're going to go heavy on defense. Ramsey, I think, is a guy that you can bring in because he can do so many things, and he can kind of fit in one of those positions where they really, really need a guy. But they still have to do so much more on defense. They still have to get that pass rush up. They still have to get more guys in secondary.
They need linebackers. They need a lot of stuff.
That's what I'm saying. So I would, if I'm Gus, I want to use more of those guys on my defense than that first guy as my left tackle. And I'm a quarterback. I want to have a great left tackle, but I think Jokel is suffice. And you can bring in a free agent guy that's already been there and done that, and you know he has the ability to protect.
Well, that's the question. What kind of quality free agent?
Yeah,
left
that's the
we
thing.
Can get.
Yeah.
All right, fan feedback spotlight, because we'll talk plenty more about that in the weeks to come. Today asked you, do you think the NFL will be a success in Los Angeles this time around, Tony? What do we get?
Here are a couple of the responses from Mike. Don't care. Jaguars are in Jacksonville, and people are mad. Us against the world. Duval from Duval Doom. No clue. but it'll be a lot of fun to watch. And from Jarrell, yes, because the NFL is way more popular now and the Rams have talent on both sides of the football.
Yeah, I personally think it will be much more successful. I could care less what the Rams' current situation is on talent. That comes and goes, right? I mean, they don't have a quarterback right now. They got Case Keenum, so I don't know, you know. But here's the thing, Dave. I'm not the only one who's suggesting this, but it's not about how many people show up, because what's going to happen is they're going to have tons of corporate money.
Yep.
They're going to, which they never had in the LA Coliseum. They didn't have the suites, that kind of, you know, advanced high end.
It's going to be better than Jerry's World.
It's going to be, and it's going to be a bunch of Hollywood people that want to be seen, and that's going to be the thing to do at least for a while. And it's going to pump so much money in there. The facility itself, they'll hold all kinds of events there. They're going to make money, and ultimately, the Rams can go 2-14.
And they'll be like, oh, there's a football team that plays here, too.
I think football will be successful in Los Angeles this time around. The question is, will it support two? I don't know, because one thing they have done is, as Pro Football Talk pointed out, they put a lot of power in Stan Kroenke's hands. As you hear the NFL saying, you know, if the Chargers don't work out a deal with Kroenke, then the Raiders will get an opportunity to. Kroenke has a lot of power now, and he can say, here are my terms. You're coming in on these terms or not. The Chargers didn't think the vote was going this way. They say Spanos, who owns the team, was shocked that it went down this way yesterday. And his choice is either to raise over $500 million to go in as a partner with Kroenke, and they say, based on his net worth and situation, that's going to be difficult for him to get that liquid that quickly, or otherwise come in as a tenant of Stan Kroenke, where he would own it, you're renting your space, you're the second-class citizen in your own home, which is not an ideal scenario either. So that's what San Diego's got to sort through over the next however long it's going to take them to figure out what they're going to do. Anyway.
I think it's cool. I mean, I think it's going to work because football is so popular now, and everybody's going to want to be a part of it. And like you said, there's so many other opportunities for this arena and for the grounds and everything that's going to happen there. I think L.A. should definitely have one. It's what, second biggest market?
I personally don't think they should definitely have one. From a business standpoint, I understand why the NFL wants them to definitely have one.
Well, it's the second biggest market in the country.
Yeah, they was the second biggest market when they didn't support them in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think it's the same kind of vibe.
I understand, but I don't think L.A. has any kind of right to
They should have a right.
I know it. Look, regardless, we're glad it's the Rams. Or, you know what? I don't care if it's the Rams or anybody else. We're glad this franchise is no longer in that conversation.
Yeah, I think we should just stop talking about all that kind of stuff here, period, from now moving forward. Never bring it up again.
I love it. All right, David, good to see you, man.
Yeah, man.
Rocking that beard, man.
Thank you, brother. Happy to be back.
Check him out at Retro Fitness and now back in the fold here at Jaguars Today on an ongoing basis as well. So for David Garrard, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to our friends at Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. For all your plumbing needs, call our friends at Metro Rooter at 695-1911, 695-1911, or check them out at metrorooter.com. That does it for Jaguars Today. Thanks to John Osier as well. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.